Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Okay, let's take a poll. How weird does it feel to be called someone's fiance, right? The first time you hear it, you do like a double take. Your heart kind of flutters, and before you know it, you go from, let's just enjoy this moment, to we're planning a fall wedding. That's where Zola comes in. Zola has everything you need to plan your wedding in one place and have fun along the way. From free planning tools like a budget tracker, super necessary, and website, to a venue and vendor discovery tool that matches you with your dream team, everything on Zola is designed to make your wedding journey as easy as possible. And with invites that can be completely customized and a wedding registry packed with gifts you actually want, Zola takes you from save our date to thanks so much without breaking a sweat. From getting engaged to getting married, Zola has everything you need to plan your wedding in one place. Start planning at Zola.com. That's Zola.com. Happy wedding.
Whether you want to
buy, buy, buy.
In a bear market or
sell, sell, sell
in a bull market, Jim Cramer can help you become a better investor. Mad Money, weeknights 6 Eastern. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
What's going on, everybody? And good morning. Today is Thursday, January 9th. We are inching closer to the playoff game. And this is your daily Go Birds morning update, giving you all the Eagles news you need to know, as well as what to keep an eye out for today. And well, it happened. He's back. Jalen Hurts at practice on Wednesday. He was out there with the team, had his pads on, had his helmet on. He was throwing. He was first in line for all the quarterback drills. And on what was a very cold day in Philadelphia, I don't have to tell you guys that, although we have listeners from all over. So it was a very cold day in Philadelphia on Wednesday. He was the only player on the field that I saw that had short sleeves on. So it's pretty clear that he is back, that he will play on Sunday. I'd be very surprised at this point if he is not the starting quarterback on Sunday for the Philadelphia Eagles. So we've spent the past 2 weeks talking about this. When's he going to be back? What stage is he in? Good news. The first time you really needed to see good news, it was good news as he was out there. So we're going to talk about that a little bit. We're going to talk about the Eagles signed a safety from Georgia. Shocking. And then Nick Sirianni had a few interesting quotes I wanted to talk about. And then we're going to take a deep dive into the Eagles offensive line versus the Packers defensive line. But first, I already spoiled it, but let's do the injury report. So actually, sorry, I almost jinxed it. First, let's do what's on the schedule. We're not messing with the order now. In fact, a little inside the dugout, I messed up the intro to this pod and I stopped and re-recorded it because we can't be having mess ups this week. So on the schedule for today at 2:15, practice begins. Will Jalen be out there? I assume he will be, but that'll be what to watch for at 2:15. And then at 4:15, the locker room opens. The players will talk. I don't think we'll hear from Jalen today. My guess is we hear from Jalen on Friday. But at 4:15, that is when the players will speak. Also, if you're listening to this in the morning, 10 a.m., me, James, Go Birds pod, playoff daily pod, live on YouTube. Come check it out, hang out, hop in the chat. If you have a good question, we will try to answer it. So that's what's on the schedule. Go Birds at 10 a.m., 2:15, practice begins, 4:15, open locker room. So the injury report, as I said, Jalen Hurts, a limited participant in practice. I don't think he can be a full participant until he clears a concussion protocol. But regardless, I would expect he is going to play on Sunday. He's back. He's practicing. I think he's going to play. So he was listed as a limited participant with his concussion and left finger. Also limited, A.J. Brown with a knee and rest. A.J. will play. He'll be fine. Kenny Pickett also practiced. Despite a rib injury, he was second in line in the quarterback drills. So it seems pretty clear they're going into Sunday. Jalen, Kenny Pickett, Tanner McKee, and then Will Shipley, limited participant as well. Did not practice Trevor Keegan with an illness, and then full participants Grant Calcaterra, N'Kobe Dean, Dallas Goedert, Bryce Huff, and Byron Young, the defensive tackle. His practice window was opened up. I don't think he's going to play, but his practice window was opened up. So overall, a very healthy team heading into the postseason. Obviously, some, you know, dealing with some little things or, you know, situations, but overall it looks like they should have most, if not all, of their players for the game on Sunday. So the team did make a roster move, and they signed safety Lewis Cine off of the Georgia, well, I mean, that's fitting, off of the Buffalo Bills practice squad. Cine, a first round pick in 2022, and of course he went to Georgia. So he comes to Philly, he gets to be with all of his former Georgia teammates. Got a chance to talk to him in the locker room, and here's what he had to say.
Must have been a whirlwind last 24, 48 hours for you. What's it been like?
Man, everything kind of happened fast, but, you know, just soaking it in, taking it in. I've already met all the guys and then some old faces. So, you know, I'm just happy to be here.
So what's it like to kind of be back on the team with so many of your Georgia teammates?
It feels like a reunion, if I'm being honest. Walked in, it was all love, all dabs, you know, hugs and whatnot, catching up. So it's really, really good to see the guys.
Because of how many teammates, former teammates you had here, mm-hmm. did you kind of know more about this organization?
Oh, of course. Who doesn't if you go to Georgia? Let's be honest. It's in the same Philly Dogs, kind of the same, but... You know, we just catch up. We text each other, call each other, and keep up with each other's careers. So it's not like I haven't heard from him in a minute.
So I love the signing. It's a little surprising they gave him a 53-man roster spot. They had one open after waiving Ian Book, but it shows how much they like him. He did play 83% of the special team snaps last year. So maybe they view him as a potential special teams guy if they need him at some point in the playoffs. But I think this is more about getting him on the roster, getting him in the building, owning his rights all year, all offseason. And he'll probably compete for, I want to say playing time, because they have Chauncey and they have Reed Blankenship, but competing for a role on the defense next year. So again, first round pick in 2022, has played 10 defensive snaps, had a leg injury his rookie year, did say he feels fine. He said the x-rays were all good. So physically he's healthy. And I think there's something to be said that in an environment with his former teammates, he's more likely to succeed. So I really like the signing by the Eagles. It's a next year thing, but it's an exciting move. And hey, it shows Howie always working on improving that roster. So the big news, though, as I said, Jalen Hurts returned to practice. Limited participant. He was out there throwing, but did talk to some of his teammates about how he looked. Mekhi Becton said he looked just like Jalen Hurts. It was great to have him out there. Lane Johnson said he was crisp and efficient. Here's Lane talking about Jalen Hurts.
I mean, he's obviously been limited, you know, physically with some stuff he can do, but I think he's been dialed in with what's coming up. We're playing in Green Bay, so, you know, today we had our first practice back with him. He was crisp, efficient, and, we had a great practice.
Lane, what's the big difference?
Yeah, I think, you know, for the most part, everybody I talked to said he thought that he looked good. We'll get more information on Thursday and Friday, but... would have been pretty bad if he wasn't out there. So he was out there, and for at least right now, we can kind of put to bed the worry about Jalen Hurts. I know until he's out of the concussion protocol, people won't be completely, you know, relieved, and I get that. But for now, I think with him back out there practicing, I think all is good in the Jalen Hurts universe, and I think he will be playing on Sunday against the Green Bay Packers. Okay, so Nick Sirianni spoke to the media on Wednesday, and outside of the Jalen Hurts update, I thought he gave two really interesting answers about this football team, and one of which I think really sums up kind of who he is as a head coach. I talked to James about this on the Daily Pod earlier in the week and how much I think Mount Union kind of represents who he is as a coach, but he gave a really interesting answer on the atmosphere of the team. I'm going to play that for you in a second. But first, I wanted to play for you this answer because it had a lot of interesting stats in there, and you could tell he really feels that, you know, he believes that his team has improved. So I wanted to ask him, and I did ask him, I shouldn't say I wanted to, I did ask him if he feels his team is playing the best football going into the postseason. Because, You know, in 2017, the Eagles were not playing their best football. Obviously, Carson had gone down. Nick Foles, bad against the Raiders, barely plays, but isn't good against the Cowboys. Honestly, not great against the Falcons, but they're not playing their best football going in. That's why they're the underdogs. In 2022, also kind of not playing their best football. Jalen had missed, I think it was two games where Gardner Minshew went 0-2, I believe, actually, if I remember correctly. Good against the Cowboys, but then didn't play great against the Saints. He comes back against the Giants, and he plays okay, but it's not like they run into the playoffs with a ton of momentum. This team really felt like they had a chance to do that. So I wanted to ask him about that, where he thinks the team is at, how he thinks they're improving, and here's what he had to say.
The goal is to have your team playing the best football going into the postseason. With all the change of the past week, the injuries, the week off, do you still feel like you're playing your best football at this time?
Yeah, I think we've gotten better as the year has continued on. Again, what do you attribute that to? You attribute that to the way you practice. Same reason why I'm not worried about rust, right, in that scenario, because I know how we go out and practice, and I know the emphasis we have in walkthrough and the meetings that you can continue to get better. And so And it's the relentless effort by our scout team in practice, and the relentless effort by our team in practice, and that vision of just how you get better, is on the forefront of our mind. And so, we looked at some numbers today of where we finished in some different stats, and every little report might be a little different, but we were in the top 10 in all our detail stuff. We were in the top 10 of our tackling. We were in the top 10 in takeaways. We were in the top 10 of giveaways. We were in the top 10 of drops. AJ led the NFL in least amount of drops percentage-wise, which I don't think can get better than zero. So he had like 97 targets and no drops, which is quite impressive. And then we talked today about, hey, if we did a stat on block destruction, if the NFL took a stat on block destruction, you know, we feel like we'd be in the top 10 there, or combination blocks between offensive linemen, we feel like we'd be in the top 10 there. So what my point of that is, you just constantly try to get better at those things. And we felt like, you know, it didn't start off that, you know, obviously we were low on the takeaway and the giveaway area early in the year, and we've gotten better at that. We didn't tackle real well against Green Bay when we first played, and we kind of put ourselves in a hole. We've gotten better at that. And so you see that through the fundamentals. You see that through the guys being on the same page. You see that, again, you see that with how the guys interact with each other, because, you know, connecting's such a big deal here. So we feel like we've continued to get better, but we got to go out and show it.
So a lot of interesting stats in there. First, you know, AJ is going to love that shout out. AJ, and look, he deserves it. Zero drops and 97 targets or whatever it is. That's pretty crazy. Also kind of crazy, he only had 97 targets. I feel like I should double check that, but seems low for a player of AJ's caliber. I know he missed time. I guess that factors into it, but he should always be in the triple digits when it comes to targets. But outside of that, you know, he mentions tackling. He mentions, you know, turnovers forced, all those things. And that is one thing that definitely stood out to me watching the Eagles-Packers game last week, prior to us even knowing it was the Packers, is that if you look at the Eagles in that week one game, they look like a much improved team from then until now. Week one, Jalen was very reckless with the football. He had four turnover-worthy plays, according to Pro Football Focus. Frankly, I think it probably should have been more, but he has four turnover-worthy plays. He had, from the bye week on, so the last 11, 12 games, whatever it is, he ended up playing, five turnover-worthy plays. So he had almost as many turnover-worthy plays in that one game, frankly, that like one first quarter, if you remember, as he did basically the entire last 75% of the season. So he's definitely improved a ton to taking care of the ball. The other one, and Nick mentions it in there, tackling. They are a much better tackling team than they were in week one. Chauncey missed some tackles in that game. He's been better. Avante missed tackles in that game. He won't really be playing. So those were two key differences. Now, when I watched the Packers, and I didn't watch every Packers game as intently, obviously, as I watched the Eagles, but I did spend a lot of time last week watching, you know, every throw Jordan Love has made this year. They look like the same team to me. I watched some of their defensive stuff. Like, they just look the same. They don't look like they've improved, gotten worse, whatever. They just look the same. So I think Nick's right. I think this team has improved as the season has gone on. He mentioned the specific areas they wanted to improve in. definitely improved in those. So while you can look at this last month and say, maybe they're not going in super hot, like obviously the last game Jalen played, he was awesome, you know, taking away the few snaps he played against Washington. So that could be part of it. But I do think this team is closer to playing their best version of football. I mean, even though Jalen didn't play against Dallas, they still blew Dallas out. They were in complete control against the Giants. I think they're playing better football this year going into the playoffs than they were in 2017 or 2022. So probably not the ideal ending with Jalen being hurt and all that. But I agree with Nick. I think they've improved as the season has gone on. I think they're playing their best football heading into the postseason. So Nick was also asked, in recent weeks, Kenny Pickett and then Tanner McKee said it as well on the Players Lounge with me, Ike, and Hugh, that the Eagles feel like a college atmosphere. The feeling in the locker room is a college atmosphere. And Nick loved that. So he was asked about it. Here's what he had to say.
A couple more.
Some players have had is that it's a college-like feel here. A, how do you perceive that? And B, is that an objective of yours?
I love that. I love that because, you know, again, I think at the end of the day, I'm a it's got my start as a learned as I was growing up from a high school coach. And then kind of in the college world is where I started. And, you know, we talk a ton about culture and connecting and, you know, and I always thought of it this way, like when you play in high school, like the guys that came to my to our game a couple weeks ago were my high school buddies, right? Because I knew them my entire life growing up. So you have a natural connection with them. The guys you go to college with, you're all away from home for the first time, right? And y'all are living right in the same dorms or whatever it is, hanging out with each other. There's a natural connection here. There's a lot of different things that challenge, you know, connection in the NFL. Some guys live in Jersey. Some guys live in Philly. Some guys live in Mainline, right? Some guys live in Delco, like wherever. I don't want to leave anybody out. You know, so there's, and some guys have families. Some guys are single. Some guys have girlfriends. Sometimes, you know, it's, so it's everybody's in a different stage a little bit in the NFL. So you have to work at that to create that. And I think that's what you appreciate so much of these guys is how much they've worked to connect with each other. Because I know this, at the end of the day, if you're a connected football team, that doesn't guarantee you win anything, but it guarantees that you don't want to let that person down. And Lane said it perfectly a couple weeks ago. We're so committed to being together and having a tight football team that we have a little bit more on the line that we don't want to let. He said, I'm paraphrasing, I don't know exactly how I said it. We have a little bit more on the line that we don't want to let each other down, and that's the key to it. And so, you know, I want there to be joy when they walk in here and see their pictures on the walls and on the video screens and want to be around and have, you know, have success and root for the success of the other guys there. And so, you know, but that doesn't happen. All those things that I just talked about doesn't happen without special people. And we have some special, special guys here that make that happen. Culture is your habits. Your habits are what happens by the team. And we have some special guys that can accomplish that.
So obviously I wasn't at the interview when the Eagles hired Nick Sirianni 4 years ago or 4.5 years ago, whatever it would be now. But man, if I'm Jeffrey Lurie and I hear that, like that's exactly what Jeffrey Lurie is looking for. When you talk about emotional intelligence, culture builder, that type of stuff, to like think about to that level of like how guys are different places in life and, you know, relaying it to how close you were to guys in high school and college and how can we make sure that guys on this team are as close. And he clearly, Nick, I mean, loves that quote from Lane. This is like the third time he's brought it up about how they have a little bit more to play for because they play for each other. I can guarantee you he's brought that up in a team meeting, but it's true. It's true. And, you know, not to circle back to bad times, but this is why the Jalen and AJ stuff like mattered. Like everyone, you want everyone to get along, but especially people in important positions. And clearly Jalen being the quarterback and AJ being wide receiver one, like you need them to be on the same page. But I, you know, why is this team so close? I've tried to ask different players that, you know, and you get kind of different answers, but like, I don't know, maybe because on defensive side of the ball, half of them went to college together. Maybe that's part of it. Maybe it's because they've been through going to the Super Bowl, the collapse last year and coming out of it. Maybe that's part of it. Maybe it's because, I mean, it's probably a lot because of the culture Nick kind of fosters there, right? Like they, you know, in the meeting, in the auditorium where the where they do all their press conferences, on a little table in the middle of the chairs, there's like Xbox remotes, or it might be PlayStation. Honestly, I'm too old at this point to know. But there's video game remotes, controllers. I'm just butchering how old I sound here. But they, you know, the guys hang out and play that in there. So yeah, I just think this team is in a really, really good place, both in the locker room, and you hear it when Brandon Graham talks. One thing that struck me when Brandon went down for the season is obviously he felt bad for himself, as he should, right? Like, he has to rehab, it could be the last season, all that. But he also spoke a lot about how much he felt this team has a chance to do something special and how much he's going to miss being a part of that. And, you know, I think he'll probably play again this year if they go all the way to the Super Bowl. But just hearing that from Brandon, especially with how he talked about the 2023 team, it's very clear this team is in a much different place. So between playing better and the atmosphere Nick has built and where they're at as a locker room, you got to feel good about this team heading into the postseason. So on the other side, we are going to dive into another position battle. Obviously, we've done the secondary. We did the Eagles receivers versus the Packers corners. That was on the Tuesday Daily Pod. And then on the Monday Daily Pod, or no, sorry, that was on the Tuesday Daily Pod. And then we also did the Eagles corners versus the Packers receivers. So those are in your feed if you haven't listened yet. But on the other side, we're going to dive into the Eagles offensive line versus the Packers defensive line. But first, a word from our sponsors. So I'll put on my old guy football hat here and just say what is the truth and what we all know from watching this Eagles team and watching football our whole life. Football's won in the trenches. It is absolutely won in the trenches. That's why this Eagles team has been so good, really, since Howie and frankly, since Andy took over. There's been down years. And we always point to the fact that, like, the down years come when the quarterback's not good, and that's obviously a big part of it. But the down years also come when the offensive line falls apart. As bad as 2020 was from Carson's perspective, the offensive line was a disaster that year. So the Eagles' offensive line this year obviously has been outstanding, and going into this matchup, you have to like their chances against this Packers defensive line. So we're going to dive into the Packers defensive line, who will be blocking who are their best players, what are some of the tendencies, how do they do against the run, and really take a deep dive into it. So first, let's start with how the Packers are against the run, which we don't normally do. Normally, this is reserved for pass rush, but we're going to talk about the run because obviously a big part of the Eagles moving the ball on offense is the running game. Saquon's fresh. The offensive line's fresh. The Packers are actually pretty good against the run. So the Packers are third best in the NFL at just 4.0 yards per carry. They've allowed the eighth fewest first downs through the air, which is, you know, obviously good. 13th in rushing touchdowns allowed, so top half the league there. And they are sixth in run stop win rate. Now, I'll put that all together, and they are, I would say, a top 10 team against the run. You could certainly argue top five because of the fact they're third in the NFL at yards per carry allowed. But what's interesting about when you dive into, you know, how are they good against the run? Their players, according to Pro Football Focus, doesn't actually grade their players out super well in terms of going against the run, the defensive tackles at least. I think where they're really good against the run, and it's partially why the Eagles are good against the run, is the play they get from their linebackers. Edrin Cooper, very good against the run. Eric Wilson and Quay Walker, both pretty good against the run. Now, all that being said, we can go over all these stats and play. We know the Eagles are going to be able to run the ball against the Packers, and we know it for two reasons. One, we've seen them do it. In week one, Saquon had 109 yards on 24 carries. He had two touchdowns. He had a long of 35. Like, they got things going on the ground against the Packers. So there's one reason that I think they'll be able to run it against the Packers. But the other is the Eagles run it against literally everybody. They have the best run blocking offensive line in the league. Detroit's in the conversation, but I think it's probably the Eagles. They have, in my opinion, the best running back in the NFL in Saquon Barkley. So while the Packers are definitely good against the run, it just kind of doesn't matter. Like, there's times where we talk on this pod about, okay, this team's good at this. This could present a problem for the Eagles. When it comes to run stopping, I'm just never worried about it. Too many times have we seen the Eagles run against the best run defenses in the NFL and run it with ease. So it's worth noting, and you guys should all know, that the Packers are good against the run. Third in the league, nothing to sneeze at in yards per carry. Is that the expression? I don't know if it's nothing to sneeze at, but third in the league is certainly nothing to overlook. I know that makes sense, but ultimately, I wouldn't be too worried about it. So let's get into how the Packers are as a pass rushing unit, because that's probably the bigger, you know, kind of concern. I think the Eagles have a good pass blocking line, obviously, but you know, Jalen sometimes isn't great in the pocket. Like when you get pressure on the quarterback, it really does mess up the whole offense. So there's just more of a concern there, I would say. I think the Eagles have been better as a run blocking unit this year than a pass blocking unit. And I include Jalen when I talk about the pass blocking unit. I include the running backs. I just think they've been a better running team overall. So the Packers as a pass rushing team, first of all, they don't really blitz. They have the second lowest blitz percentage in the NFL. They blitz in only 17%. Of the time. Now, in week one, Jalen got blitzed quite a bit early on against the Packers, if you remember, and he did really good against it. So the Eagles have seen some of the Packers' blitz packages. Obviously, they'll try to bring something different, but Jalen's been really good against the blitz this year. And with how little the Packers do it, I don't really anticipate blitzing being an issue here. It'd be surprising. Like, if they came out blitz heavy, that would mean they still think that they see something, a weakness in how the Eagles protect it and how Jalen handles it. But I think they've done a good enough job against the blitz this year where I don't have a concern about the Packers blowing the Eagles offense up with the blitz. So second lowest blitz percentage. Now their pass rush numbers overall are pretty average and mediocre. They're 12th in hurries, 18th in quarterback knockdowns. They're 9th in sacks, so top 10, you know, that's pretty decent. 14th in total pressures, and they had 45 sacks, by the way. They have 143 pressures this year. That's 14th in the league. They're 16th in pressure percentage, so 22% of the time they get pressure on opposing offenses and quarterbacks. Now, that number alone, I think, is a nice one if you're the Eagles. So the Packers going up against all types of mediocre offensive lines are only get pressure on roughly one every four snaps. There's no shot they're getting that against the Eagles. If that's what they can do throughout the league, there's no shot they're going to get consistent pressure on the Eagles. And this is really like the number one stat for me when it comes to the pass rush, and it was like couldn't have worked out in terms of more of a telling stat. The Packers in pass rush win rate. So that is an ESPN stat where they don't judge like whether you get pressure essentially, but I think it's mostly if you win at the line. So let's say Josh Sweat goes up against an offensive tackle, he wins the snap, so he gets past that offensive tackle. Maybe it doesn't result in a pressure, but you won that snap. So the pass rush win rate for the Packers, get ready for this, 26th in the NFL. 26th in the NFL, the Green Bay Packers edge and defensive tackles in pass rush win rate. None of their edges are in the top 20 in individual pass rush win rate. I should specify that 26 was a team. They're as a team, they're 26. None of their edges, none of their defensive tackles are in the top 20. For some perspective, the Eagles in team pass rush win rate are 8th. And we all think the Eagles' defensive line has definitely gotten better, and but none of us think the Eagles have an amazing defensive line. 26th in pass rush win rate. So you add everything up, and really they're a team that doesn't blitz. They're a team that doesn't get a ton of pressure by winning their matchups, and especially going against a Lane and a Jordan Mailata, you don't think they'll be able to get a ton of pressure. And then overall, their pressure numbers are only just okay. So the Packers' defensive line as a whole, their strength is run stopping. When you consider the Eagles' offensive line is awesome at run blocking and running the ball, you would still take the Eagles as an advantage there. And then you look at their pass rush numbers, and they're just not that impressive. So week one, when the Eagles played the Packers, this backs it up. The Eagles' offensive line, so this doesn't include pressure that Hurts gave up. The Eagles' offensive line gave up 9 hurries, 0 sacks, and 0 hits. So the Packers' defensive linemen did not win against the Eagles' offensive linemen pretty much at all, but definitely not consistently. Mailata gave up 3 hurries. Lane gave up none. Dickerson gave up 2 hurries. Cam Jurgens gave up 1 hurry. Mekhi Becton, 2 hurries. So you look at that, Cam Jurgens and Becton were making their first like real starts in the NFL at the positions they play. They gave up 3. You would think that they'd be better this time. Mailata has been awesome this year. I'd be pretty surprised if he gave up 3 hurries again, but regardless, he didn't give up a sack or a quarterback hit. So the Eagles' offensive line has gone against this Packers pass rush, has their numbers are not that good overall, and they were not good against the Eagles. So who are the guys to look out for on the Packers pass rush? So their best edge rusher, the Pro Bowler that made it, shouldn't have made it over Josh Sweat. Rashawn Gary, he lines up on the left side, 457 snaps this year, 178 on the right, so he will move over a little bit, but he will mostly be going up against, if he's lining up on the left side, he'll go up against the right tackle. He'll mostly be going up against, against Lane Johnson. I can't believe I blanked on that name. That was an embarrassing moment in podcast history. So 457 snaps on the left. He'll be going up against Lane Johnson. This year, Rashawn Gary, 44 pressures, 7 hits, 30 hurries, 6.5 sacks. Good numbers for sure. He's definitely, I think, their best defensive lineman overall. But again, do any of us listening think Lane Johnson is going to struggle against Rashawn Gary? No. So in week one, he had 2 hurries. He had a sack, but that was Jalen's fault. He held onto the ball. He never really moves on the inside. He only has 3 snaps this year at defensive tackle. So it'll be Gary versus Lane mostly. Also a little bit of Mailata. I like the Eagles' chances there. Their second best pass rush or edge this year in terms of numbers, I think Lucas Van Ness is probably their second best edge rusher, but Kingsley Enagbare, I looked up the pronunciation, I listened to him a bunch of times, that's the best I could do. I'm in playoff mode, no more mispronunciation. Kingsley Enagbare, so he will also be going up against against Lane Johnson, because he lined up 302 times on the left. Little more split than Rashawn Gary, 195 times on the right. He moved inside a little bit more, 22 snaps at defensive tackle. And on the year, he had 23 pressures, 4 hits, 14 hurries, and 4.5 sacks. So the Packers certainly like to attack. I think their best combined rushers are on that left side, which is good news, because you certainly like that matchup against Lane Johnson. So Lucas Van Ness, a guy we talked about prior to the draft as a potential player the Eagles will pick, 19 pressures this year, 3 hits, 12 hurries, 3 sacks. He lines up almost exclusively on the right, which means he'll be going up against Jordan Mailata. 395 snaps on the right, 32 on the left. Also barely moves inside, only 18 snaps at defensive tackle this year. And in week one against the Eagles, he had 1 pressure. So the combo of Lucas Van Ness and Rashawn Gary did not get much going week one against the Eagles. And really haven't gotten a ton going this year. The other edge to look at, Brenton Cox Jr. He lines up, he barely plays, to be honest, only 160 total snaps all year, but lines up mostly on the left side, which means he will be going up against Lane. I'm just never going to be good at figuring out that. I try my best, and I think I've done it correctly through this. But figuring out with the edge, it's not easy to do. So, Brenton Cox Jr., 17 pressures this year, 3 hits, 10 hurries, 4 sacks. So, that's impressive. But a part-time player for sure. So, that's where I'm at with the edges. I think the Eagles tackles definitely have the advantage there. There's probably not an episode we'll do the rest of the way where I think a group of edges have the benefit over the Eagles tackles. But overall, you look at the tackles, edges on the Packers, they're just not special. Like, they're Rashawn Gary is good, Lucas Van Ness is good, but they're just not special. So now let's look. Excuse me. Now let's look at the defensive tackle. So in my opinion, their best defensive tackle is Kenny Clark. 32 pressures this year, 4 hits, 27 hurries, only 1 sack. Basically lines up 50-50 between lining up on the left side of the defensive tackle, the right side of the defensive tackle. So both Becton and Dickerson will get some snaps against him. In week one, he had 4 hurries. That's not nothing. So, you know, again, I was Becton's first game. It was Cam's first game. Now they've seen him. I like the ability of Stoutland to come up with a plan here. So I'd be surprised if Kenny Clark wrecked the game. Carl Brooks, 23 pressures, 16 hurries, 3 hits, 3.5 sacks. TJ Slayton, 13 pressures, 2 hits, 10 hurries, 1 sack. And then Devontae Wyatt, who had a ton of pressures this year, 30 pressures, 3 hits, 22 hurries, and 5 sacks. Also, obviously, a very good player. He had 2 hurries in week one. That was the second most on the Packers. So a good set of pass rushing defensive tackles in Kenny Clark and Devontae Wyatt. I probably have a little bit more of a concern with the defensive tackles getting pressure up the middle against Jalen than I do the edges. But ultimately, Becton, now that he's played a full season, Cam Jurgens, now that he's played a full season, Jeff Stoutland with the chance to game plan. I really, really like the matchup of the Eagles offensive line versus the Packers defensive line. And as we started this podcast with, or I should say started this segment with, The games are won in the trenches, and on the offensive side of the ball, I think the Eagles have the advantage against that Packers defensive line. So that'll do it for today's episode of Go Birds Daily. Thank you guys so much for listening. If you're listening to this in the morning, come hang out on YouTube at 10 a.m. Me and James Seltzer, the playoff daily pods continue. And until then, he's Elliot, I'm James. Talk to you guys later.